Evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight, we are on episode 194, and we're going to talk a little bit about hot tent stoves, things like that. What kind of brought this on is, I'm going to swing it immediately over to you, Ben, because you have a new addition.
I do have a new addition. Something new to show on the channel and use, and it's a good toy. I don't know if you have the link.
I'm sure I can bring something up in some hurry.
So.
So if anybody is out there and they're wondering, well, what do we mean by a tent stove or a hot tent stove? Literally, there's kind of this whole genre of tenting in cold weather where your tent has a what's called like a flue jacket or a stove jacket on it, and it's a spot where you can actually put a flue from a stove up through your tent and it won't melt your tent and all that good stuff. I mean, it's a little bit more expensive of a hobby to get into versus just standard weather camping, but it does have some perks to it, and we've talked about that in previous podcasts and stuff like that, and I highly encourage you to go back and check those out. But tent stoves themselves, they're kind of a passion all on their own. If you start looking online and talking what's the best one, for every person you ask, you're going to get that many answers because there is no really great one. There's things to look for, things to kind of not look for or avoid, you know what I mean? But there's, and I'm going to be open with this. Ben, you're a little bit more experienced with this than I am, simply because I'm not really set up to do any kind of hot tenting. I just got those what's the word I'm looking here for? The one piece coats.
Oh,
Polish love.
The ponchos,
that's it. That's the word I'm looking for. The Louvre, that's them. So I am going to try and set up a small hot tent with that sometime this year with a stove that Ben and I actually created. When Ben moved out west, I went up, I retrieved the stove that we made. If anybody's seen it before, it was out of an old helium tank. We did a quick video on it, so hopefully we get to see that in action. Because Ben and I had planned to make this stove, take it out, and use it on one of our adventures, but then the move happened and it kind of, plans changed. You know, life happens.
Things happen.
Exactly. Ben does have one right there. This is a brand new tent stove. I have a link here. I'll pull it up while Ben is talking about it and let you find folks to have a little bit more of a look at it through the Amazon because the pictures are, you know, shows a little bit more. But Ben physically has this in his hands.
Yes. So you can kind of see it off to the side. So that's it. The whole thing weighs, I think, 4.5 pounds according to the spec. The one I bought is the one that he's got up. There's a $50 coupon on it right now. I haven't really tested it yet, so it's never had a fire in it. It is brand new. I only received it this week. And like everything, if we review a product, we'll tell the truth. So far, I've liked a lot about it, but the bag that it came with, I've seen other people review it and said, oh, it was really awesome. But I've already, I have never used this thing, and there's already a bit of a hole in the bottom of the top bag that holds the chimney. So other than that, I think I could easily repair that. It has a lot of good stuff. It's not excessively big. It's about big enough for the stove to fit in, and that's it. You're not getting a lot of extra room on this thing. That's fine. But what are you looking for? That's kind of one of your questions. What are you looking for with you've got something totally interesting showing up there now.
Yeah, I switched back over. I was trying to find our comments is what I was after. We got Dave here, Real Big Monkey, joining us, and I heard the ding up, and I was trying to... I screwed up. Continue on.
So I had to choose between two, just before we get too far. There was... This company is probably one of the cheapest titanium stoves I found on the market. When I look around with a few other designs, it looks like it's basically the exact same design, just with a different name. So right here in Canada, I don't know, the US Amazon might have a better price. These are $450, but there's $50 off for, so basically for $400, you can get a titanium stove that seems to be relatively well built. You know, it's got a damper. It's got a spark arrestor up top. Spark arrestor. On the videos and images I've seen, these look like they were like key rings, and it's a different design than I expected. Not a better or worse design. And I can tell you the first mod I'm planning on doing is I think I'm going to grab 3 metal leads from my fishing kit and attach that just so that any rope I have isn't that close to the chimney.
So you are a little bit more experienced with this, Ben. You have done it a little bit. I'm going to play kind of devil's advocate here, or Werner's advocate, whichever way you want to go it. I'm going to ask you some questions. You're going to hopefully give me the answers I'm fishing for on here, because I'm thinking these are going to be some of the questions most people would have when they're looking at getting tent stoves. First thing you said was you got a titanium stove. Why would you go with a titanium stove instead of like a steel stove or a stainless steel stove or some of the other stoves out there that you can find from like Princess Auto? And not knocking Princess Auto, don't misunderstand, folks. But Princess Auto, you can sometimes find what's called a camp stove for about $100. You can also go on Amazon and other big websites like that, and you can find camping stoves for around the $100, $200, but they're going to be made out of steel and things like that. So why would you, or why did you gravitate towards titanium, Ben?
So start off, let's just talk quickly about the Canadian, or the Princess Auto one. Because it's a decent stove for what it is, but if you ever see it, it's about twice as big as this particular stove, and it weighs probably 30 or more pounds. Like, it is a relatively heavy beast, and it folds up zero. Like, there's no folding of this stove. It's the chimney can come apart and go inside of it, and that's about as small as it gets. You might be able to pull the legs off and toss inside, but you're still carrying around a small barrel. So if you're planning on hoofing it in, that in itself is a load. Where this thing here weighs, I think it's 4.5 pounds. So
yep.
I went with about the lightest option I could find with this particular design. I think there's another one that's made by a Canadian company that it's all sort of like the chimney, and it's just the front plate and the back plate. It may even actually weigh a little bit less. So there are a few other designs you can find out there, but this is a pretty lightweight and easy to do design. Titanium versus steel is lighter. And it's still pretty strong as a metal. So it has fewer corrosion issues. So you won't end up with it being rusty and stuff. So really, I expect the titanium stove to weigh less and last longer than I would expect the average stainless steel or sometimes I think they're even carbon steel stoves. And if you have those, you really have to be careful. They'll tend to corrode a little bit more. Regardless, you need to take care of them. You know, clean them off, wipe them down, keep an eye on them. Titanium also gets really cool when you heat it up. So as you heat it up, it gets these blues and purples and coppers to go through it. It's kind of cool. So the big thing for me, what?
No, I was going to say the metal on that stove itself is relatively thin, isn't it? Because these other stoves we were talking about, especially that Princess Auto stove. Once again, sorry, Princess Auto, we ain't picking on you. It's just a good reference. Most people have know this stove that go out into the woods because they see it a lot. It's very well advertised and very well out there. Once again, great stove. But the metal in this is thinner, which is kind of where it comes in lighter. And it doesn't warp as much with the heat, does it?
Titanium is known to warp less. It still could warp to a degree. So you still want to be somewhat careful with them and sort of heat them up relatively slowly and then make sure you don't go like just throwing a bunch of water over to cool. Titanium cools down very quick. As soon as the coals cool down, the titanium tends to lose its heat. It doesn't hold heat. It's a very good conductor. So any heat in it, it'll radiate out really quick. And then when the flame and especially the coals cool down, the stove will cool down. So at the end of your camping trip, you can pick it up and go. Steel holds your heat a little bit longer. And if you've ever had the experience of using a titanium spoon or fork versus a steel spoon or fork, you can put the two of them in a cup of hot water, and you pull the two out, and the steel one will still burn you well after the titanium one feels like room temperature again. Right? They'll both retain heat for a bit, but titanium loses its heat significantly faster.
Fair enough. So much along to what you said there, Ben. Dave over in the corner here, Real Big Monkey One. Another shout out to him. If nobody's checked out his channel, be sure. Another great bushcrafter there. But anyway, he said, buy one buy one, cry once. Get an expensive titanium stove and use it for life. So he was kind of getting at that the quality with the titanium. It's one of those products you are kind of getting what you pay for. You can look online and you'll see all these cheaper stoves. They have a place. They do their thing. But when it comes to camping and backpacking, as Ben said, you're going to look for those lighter materials. Hopefully something that folds down or nests in some way, shape, or form. So you're not literally huffing around like the box that you've seen Ben hold up there. Because the bulk of it alone kind of becomes bothersome. And yeah, it's just going to last you a little longer. Well, hopefully for life is ultimately the goal. And you're more likely to get that with titanium than you would steel or something like that. You said titanium has some corrosion problems there. Or not titanium. Oh. Metal would have more corrosion problems. Is that from like the heat up, cool down, and the moisture going into it? Or is there just something inherent of the metal? What's your opinion on that, Ben?
I just think steel in general, like anything with iron in it, does tend to corrode over time. And of course, heating it up doesn't help that process, right? You know that with a lot of stuff, but if you look at steel objects, it do need a little bit more care. And then you're, like you said, you're heating it up and it's cooling down. I think that exposes it to a bit more, especially things like the hinges, where dirt can kind of get in there, moisture could get trapped in a bit, and you'd end up with that problem. So it's a, I think they're a bit more resistant to that kind of issue. So titanium is very able to handle heat. It doesn't break down in heat as much, and doesn't warp as much, doesn't corrode as much. So it's just generally a better material. It's also technically a bit stronger than steel, and that's why they can get away with even thinner. So it's a lighter steel by volume, and then you can go a bit thinner. For example, had you bought the same stove as I have with the window on the side, it'll still be the same weight as a steel stove with no windows under websites. If you the same Denshell door,
yep,
provides this particular one. And by provide, I mean I paid good money for it, and they have offered me zero incentive to even talk about this product.
If you're listening out there, folks, at Denshell, always shameless plug, we'd love to get some backing.
But I am going to test it out, and I will when I, my plan is when I do the first burn and stuff, I'll show you guys what my experience was and stuff. But I have watched a few other videos. There's a few other people that have it. This particular one is not well covered on YouTube yet. And the price is relatively affordable compared to some of the other ones. Pomali was one I really looked at. But honestly, and I know like Lone Wolf has a hand in that. He has one with his brand put right on it. Mm. But I was looking at another couple $100 for that. And, you know, I have limited funds. So
as most of us generally do.
If I could save a few hundred, that's what I went with. I seen him in a review one for Noratent. And honestly, the bag, the overall shape and design looks almost identical, and I suspect it is the same stove, or very similar. And we were
kind of talking about that a little bit before we started up on the podcast there. Just before I forget, Ben, a couple things from the side over here on our comments. Red Sand Adventures joined us here again tonight, and I wanted to say, Red Sand, last week when you joined us, I seen your comment just as the power went out. So I did give you a shout out when we came back on. I don't think a lot of folks jumped back on and watched the live stream after it got disconnected the first time, and I apologize for that. Literally like 5 minutes into the podcast, power went out, and then we had to boot everything back up and start back into it. And anyway, we did the podcast. We just didn't have people come back. So I want to apologize for that. We also got Chris Loveless joining us again here. Happy to join a live chat. He does have a question. And we can... Sorry?
I said, oh.
Right? So, hopefully later on, he meant for us to get to this question a little later, but I'm going to ask it now, and we can kind of pick away at it through the entire show, because it's a good question. I have a good question for you, guys, pertaining to hot stoves. How would I restore a newer but rusted cast iron tent stove? I haven't found any good advice. So, a cast iron tent stove, for one, it's going to be heavy. I'm kind of appreciating the fact you got yourself a cast iron tent stove. Hopefully you got a sled or something to drag that thing around. Beautiful thing about cast iron is it's actually not bad to restore. If you want some really good advice on restoring cast iron, look up on how to restore cast iron frying pans. Now, the way I have done it myself, with cast iron frying pan for sure, is you make a nice hot fire, you get the coals, even when it's rusty and stuff, you throw it in there, you bring it back up to temperature, you pull it out, and then you clean it with charcoal and sand, is what I've always done. Not saying this is the exact way to do it. I suggest you do a little bit of research. This is just one of those things, you know, the old guys that were around the cook camps and logging camps and stuff like that lived on cast iron. And this is basically when we were there and, you know, you'd go away for the season, come back. There'd always be some surface rust and stuff on these cast iron frying pans. This is what the old cooks would do. They'd get the fire going. They'd get it up pretty hot. They'd take it out, let it cool down. Then they'd hit it with a little bit of water. Once it's cool to touch, like you can hold on to it. You don't want to hit that with water while it's scalding hot. It could create some problems. But anyway, once it cools down a little bit of water, some of the coals directly out of the fire, and a little bit of fine grit sand. And then they would just polish that out until all the surface rust was done. And then they would reheat it, do this a few times. And then, of course, they would go on to re-season it and things like that. But, I've resurfaced several cast iron frying pans. It's a bit of elbow grease, but it is 100% possible. That's the beauty of cast iron. That stuff will bounce back pretty good.
I actually had a little cast iron stove, and I wouldn't call it a tent stove. It was meant for a house, but it would be like a room stove. And all I did in that particular instance was a bit of steel wool and a wire brush, and took the most of the corrosion off it quickly. And at that point, I got some high heat paint and repainted it because it was a stove. But there's a few other products you can use. Believe it or not, vinegar really does a good job on corrosion. So just, especially if it's an odd shape, you don't have enough volume to sink this whole stove in, just soak some rags in vinegar and put over the most rusted spots. And then come back like a couple hours or a day later, and you probably can wipe off the worst of the rust.
You know, and what works really good for that too? Believe it or not, Coca-Cola. I don't know what the heck's in that stuff. I don't drink it personally, but that will remove rust very well. But then you got to get rid of the sugar and stuff. And you mentioned about hitting it with high heat paint. Another option on that is you can literally buy a product that's called stove polish. It's actually pretty good for that cast iron too, because cast iron's a little bit more porous than, you know, your more denser, well, not denser, flatter metals. I don't know what I'm looking here for. But anyway, it doesn't polish on a flat surface like you would, but you can get it on there and it'll kind of reseal the surface. The caveat to this is you're going to have to put two or three fires through it outside just on its own to burn off all the excess fumes and stuff, because that smell will stick around probably for literally a good 10 fires or so.
Yeah. I've done a similar thing even with my steel stoves. When I had one in Nova Scotia, I had just a big flat top, more modern airtight stove, but a bit of corrosion happened on the top of it. Just a light brushing with the sandpaper, and then recoated it, and it works fine. But like you said, the first one or two fires, it does off gas quite a bit, so you really want to make sure the windows are open or do it outside if that's possible. Yep. In my case, it was a 400-pound stove, and I wasn't dragging it up the stairs to do that. So
windows and fans, man, the country way.
But that would be your method. Same thing with anything. Get rid of the corrosion. If you have corrosion on something, it tends to spread. It's like a cancer. If you can get rid of it, and then, like you said, you need to sort of treat it with something that's corrosion resistant. So there are products out there for that. It keeps the moisture and stuff away from it.
Red Sand sure. Adventures here. Not sure how bad it's rusted, but if it's just surface rust, you could use an acid to clean it and then heat it up and rub it down with coconut oil. And once again, coconut oil, you're basically talking about seasoning a stove, but same kind of deal. I mean, that would, you want to put something over it to kind of seal up those pores, because otherwise it's going to oxidize really quick again.
And honestly, I think it's acetic acid and vinegar. That's what vinegar actually is. And there's a citric style acid. I think it's a citric acid in your Coke. And there's also probably carbonic acid in Coke.
Yep.
So there's two existing acids within it in Coke. I could be off on it. There is definitely an acid, and that's what works in it, really. The sugar is actually counterproductive.
Yeah, it's irrelevant. It just makes things sticky. Fish85, join us. We actually have a pretty good crew coming over here in the comments. Welcome back, Fish85. It's been a while since we've seen you. Finally catch a live show. Hope everyone is doing good and staying healthy. Shore Fish, once again, thanks for joining us, friend.
So anyway. Yeah. So the topic again is the stove. So I'm hoping to get out soon with it. But the beauty is it gets you out there a little bit longer. I tried making, and I want to sort of bring this back up to what Really Big Monkey said the other day. You know, buy once, cry once. I made the, and we recorded it. I mean, there's videos and stuff of it. I made the ammo can stove. And I looked up kits to buy the ammo can stove. Like the ammo can stove itself kit, I think, was $120. And you still had to buy an ammo can, which is another $30-$40, depending on where you can find it, unless you happen to have one. And then the time you put in it, plus you have to buy build a chimney. I think I spent over $100 on my chimney. And it was, I used pipe from...
Exhaust pipe.
But I had to buy a whole bunch of lengths that were pre-expanded on one end, and I had to cut them down so they fit in the stove. So I had to, you know, each one was, I think, like $15, but I had to buy like 8 to get enough to do what I wanted. And then we had to have a welder, you know. So when you added it all up, I don't think it was any cheaper. Like, I really don't think it was the cheap solution. But
no, I don't. And that's the thing. Sometimes making things like your own stove, it's great experience, and I'm not saying don't do it. But final dollar cost, you're not really saving a ton of money. Unless you happen to have everything just laying around. But if you're going out to buy this as a project, it takes a lot, especially with the cost of stuff nowadays.
I mean, there's an effort to it. There's a time to it. And that thing weighed, I think we weighed it out, it was still like 10 to 15 pounds. Even after I lightened it out. So eventually I got a light steel. It was a stainless steel to make my own chimney. When I got it down, it was, I think, just under 10 pounds. I think it was over 15 with the old chimney. So I was still lugging something, and it didn't go into a pack. There was no putting that into a pack to travel.
So another question from Chris Loveless here, and just saying hi to Steve. He's joining us again tonight, Steve McDonald. Chris, what do you use as a sealant for the ammo can to make sure no carbon monoxide escapes outside of the chimney? If I'm not mistaken, you had a flange on the top of it, and then all the pipes just kind of stacked in top of each other. Like you said, you had a flared end on one of the pipe and a small end of the pipe, and they just kind of nested on top of each other and kind of self-sealed themselves. Much like a regular stove pipe.
Automotive pipe, that's what I did. But honestly, the natural draw of the chimney tended to pull air in as it went up. It didn't really smoke out, so we had no issue with that. You should have a carbon dioxide or monoxide meter in, and you can buy them. They're not that expensive. It would be a good idea to have one. The other thing is, and this is something that a lot of people don't really get, when you're hot tent camping, you don't want to 100% seal your tent up because it does need to breathe air. Fresh air needs to come in to supply the stove, and it needs to go out the top. So you don't seal it 100%. You just try to get most of the drafts and stuff out. So you do leave a little bit of breathing ability in it. And keep an eye on it. It is possible that it'll get smoky in there, especially if you don't get good draw, if you don't have it set up right. Getting the first plane going and getting it to actually start working takes a bit.
Yeah. And for making doors and stuff like that, you can literally go to like Crappy Tire or any glass place generally, and they'll get you it's Kevlar rope or fiber, like fire resistant fiber. Basically it comes in a rope form, and you can use that with there's a special glue they'll probably provide it as well, and you can seal that around your doors and any glass parts and things like that, and that'll give you a nice airtight seal, much like you would your fireplace in your house. I take mine in every 2 years and get the seal redone, just so it's not sucking air in. And the reason you want it air sealed there so good is the more air it draws in, the faster it's going to burn your fuel inside, right? So that's kind of why you're trying to eliminate those draws. You don't want it to run away from you either and put too much heat up the pipe, and then you get into flue fires and all that crazy business. It's a little harder to get into a flue fire with a tent stove simply because you're never really burning them long enough to build up the creosote. Hopefully you're cleaning them out as you break it down. But I suppose potentially could happen. What more realistically could happen is if you get that pipe too hot and your stove jacket's not the best quality, or maybe you have fabric hanging a little closer than it should be, you could potentially have some problems there with the material around it igniting or melting or smoldering or deforming in some way.
In fact, that is a true thing. I have seen videos, and honestly, we had the same thing. When I had the automotive style pipe on mine, I had that blood red.
Yep.
Like, it looked like you could poke through it with something. Like, it was that red. It tended to cool down relatively quick. It didn't stay blood red for more than probably the bottom few inches, but I got enough flame in that little stove when it was going good that it got that chimney pretty red. And I got the top, which is basically the bottom of the actual ammo can, I got that pretty red too, right? And so you could easily get the frost effect where you drop the water on it, just bubbles on
it. Yeah, it basically vaporizes the air around the water and it creates hydrofoiling or something like that. I can't remember what it's called. Fish 85, I found a high temp silicone style seal for wood stoves. That's been working pretty good for them. So that's another option for sealing up some stuff too.
I used fiberglass actually, and just I poked it in around. So an ammo can comes with a rubber seal all around the cover, and that rubber seal is going to melt. It's going to disappear. So pull that out, and I replaced it with just regular fiberglass. I just batted it in and closed it up. That provided my bottom seal. I didn't find I needed much seal around the door. I mean, that's where you have your vent anyways. So by not sealing it, I just didn't need as much vent ability. It didn't always leak a little bit around the door. And around the chimney, I didn't worry about it. We welded a good flange, and everything else I mounted on it was tight enough.
You said about venting. So while we're on that topic, why don't we talk about dampeners and things like that? That's something you kind of want to look for in a tent stove, my opinion, is some way of controlling the airflow in and out of your stove. Now, yours there has a wonderful damper on it as well as a great front vent on there. I think I still got it thrown up here on the back page. Just give me a second.
Yeah, I think the website might have better not be able to easily show.
So you can see on the side here, this one has, I think you can see that. Can you see that on your end there, Ben? So, yeah, there we go. That zoomed in. Hopefully that's, yeah. So, same kind of deal. You see it there. It's literally controlling the amount of heat that's going to be exiting this thing. It comes off the side by the looks of it, Ben? Or is it off the top? The top.
Okay, so, this screws on, and it comes at the back, and this goes right above, like, right at the base of the chimney. And mounts the top of the stove, base of the chimney, and it sticks off the back, and you can control the valve quite well, 360-degree spin.
Trying to see if there's a good picture here. That's the top.
And it's well indexed, so if it's straight across, you're fully shut off, and then straight up and down, you're fully open. So it's easy to know where it's to. The wood stove I built, I never had this. This wasn't something I was able to get. So I controlled everything was with the input into the stove. The ability to slow the air going down should mean that the air in the chimney can be controlled its temperature a little bit better.
So, and that is the benefit. And I know people are going to say this now because those in-pipe dampeners, they're not wet certified anymore for home stoves and things like that. The reality is this is not probably a wet certified stove anyway, and you're using it in a tent. The ideal thing with these in-pipe dampeners is you can control the amount of heat going up through the pipe, which allows you to, one, slow the burn down a little bit, but two, keep more heat at your level. It's not just going out of the pipe. The thing you have to be careful of with an in-pipe dampener is you don't want to close it off too much, because then not enough of the gas is going to escape, and you're going to cause a lot of back baffling where smoke and carbon dioxide, stuff like that is going to start pouring out of these little imperfections in and around the door, the glass and stuff like that, and it could cause you problems. So with the in-vent, you just kind of want to keep an eye on it. With yours, when it was closed, it didn't look like it was 100% sealed. It still had a little bit of air to go around it, which is ideally the way you want these dampeners. You don't want them to ever be able to, like, close it straight off. Because
if it closes 100% off, what that means is that the smoke has nowhere to go, so it's going to come out the vents.
Oh, real big monkey. Dave has an interesting point down here. What's surprising is the continuous operating limit for titanium is 540 degrees Celsius, and for stainless steel, it's 760 degrees Celsius. You'd think titanium would be higher, but it isn't. Titanium's only average advantage is lightweight. So, interesting bit of information there. That, once again, that's come from Dave, real big monkey one. Just food for thought. Both of those are pretty high temperatures that you're going to be burning in a stove. You know what I mean?
Some people say the titanium doesn't warp as much, but yes, it will fail at a slightly at a lower temperature.
But it's also generally thinner. So is it because we're comparing? Now, a question for you, Dave, I guess, because of this is your little tidbit of information. Is that based on like inch for inch? Or is that based on a titanium stove versus a steel stove? Because generally your titanium stoves are going to be around like, you know, 16th, 32nd, 1/8 thickness. As where your steel stoves, you're going to be into that like 1/8, 3/8, quarter inch thicker steelness there. So I'm curious, is it based on the exact same dimensions and thicknesses with your numbers there? Or is it kind of like stove for stove?
I think it's metal for metal. Right, titanium has a basically a melting temperature.
Oh, and it could be. I don't know. I'm not a metallurgist.
I would suspect that thickness has very little to do with it at that time. I mean, that being said, it would take longer to heat up a thicker piece of metal to cause it to fail. Like, but the same temperature will eventually. It's just you have a bit more escape. So yeah, you don't want to be putting say charcoal in this thing and then starting to pump air into it, because you could easily cause it to fail, right?
So Dave came back with, based on material composition, not warping, but intergranular corrosion.
Yeah. So.
All right, fair enough. Good information. So question for you, Ben, once again, playing the questionnaire on this one. What can someone expect to get for a runtime out of one of these stoves? Because I know another common thing people think of is, oh, I got myself a stove for my tent. I'll stock that before I go to bed, and I'm going to be warm all night.
So we tested three stoves, me, Robert, and Gary. We went out and we tested three different stoves. So I believe the titanium one that Jeremy had at the time was probably a Pomoli, but I'm not betting on that, but it was definitely a good titanium stove. And Gary had a steel one. It was a popular name. I know you could buy it there in Nova Scotia in Bear River area. It's a really popular one. It was a little bit heavier, and I had the ammo can stove. And I can tell you that after about 2 hours, all of us were waking up and filling the stoves. So you're not getting 3 to 4 hours out of these things. You're getting one and a half, maybe two if you've stogged it up and turned it down and just let it kind of smolder. Right? In that slow mode, you're not getting a ton of heat. Can you go, please?
I see you got your sidekick there. But I mean, yeah. That's the other thing that's kind of a misconception with these stoves is you don't want it like really warm. It's there to kind of take off the chill and to augment your sleep system. You still want to go out there with a good sleeping bag, a good sleeping pad, warm clothes. Don't go out there with your little thin blanket expecting the stove to keep you warm like you're sleeping at home. The reality is you're still in a tent. A lot of that heat's going to escape incredibly fast. You're just trying to keep it from, like, just basically above freezing is what I've always shot for in the few times I've done it. And then relied on my sleep system. Just breaks the chill, keeps you a little warmer, but you're not really going out there to try and sweat yourself out.
You're going out there, hopefully you have the right clothing, the right equipment. And the stove works really good in the evening while you're setting up. When you're cooking your meal, you can boil, you know, you put a small pot on there, you can boil some water, have some coffee, have some tea. Go see your sister. Yeah, just go sit on the bed. So for that, as the evening approaches, what I had done in the past, I did try running it all night. I ended up having to have a fair amount of wood to keep one going. You're talking 2 to 3 armloads still. And that seems like it would be a lot of wood for such a small stove, but the end of the night, I'd easily burn through over half of it, and I still wanted some to cook up a breakfast. So you break your wood down pretty small. You're not putting a big solid log in this thing. Like, you're almost everything you're putting in is probably not much more than an inch across. And the length. And what did I say? This particular one, the longest piece I'm fitting in this is a foot. Right?
Yeah. So that becomes my next question, a segue into this. How much extra effort is it to prepare your firewood for this? I guess it's not extra effort, because otherwise you wouldn't be going out, period. How much effort is it to prepare wood for this? Are you expending way more energy? At the end of the day, is it still worth it? Like, what's your thoughts on that, Ben?
Well, I think it's definitely worth it. But yeah, you're exactly right. Because if you were just to have a campfire outside and you weren't going to have the hot tent, then you might only break that wood down, say, split it once, maybe twice, either half or quarter it. At this point, depending on what you have, you're splitting it down significantly more times. So, you know, that's some effort. But then it's the convenience of being able to cook in your tent. You have no wind on you. You're protected from the rain or snow or whatever weather there is inside. So you're relatively sheltered, and you have this thing that's pumping in some decent heat. It means when you're changing at night into your night clothes, because, you know, I tend to wear like thermals when I'm sleeping in there, and you still have your nice sleeping bag, you're comfortable in comparison to trying to do it, say, outside in your hammock, where you're exposed to the wind, you're exposed to the weather. And if you've ever tried to switch from your damp day clothes to your dry night clothes when winter camping at, say, minus 30, 40 degrees in a hammock, it's a chore, right? Like, you're stripping down and it's bitter cold and you're trying to get it in, and all that clothes is cold. So you're pulling that clothes on, it's cold. It heats up relatively quickly, but that instant is not a pleasurable experience.
That in between, you can lose a lot of heat. Yeah, you could develop a chill that may take you hours to get out of your system, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so you don't want to delay in your switch. You have everything laid out and get ready. With the hot tent, you have that extra time. It gives you that bit more enjoyment. So you get the lighter, like when I've done it in the past, I set up my system, so I have my hibernate, so my insulated sleep pad. I have a tarp of some type or some kind of drop cloth or blanket that goes underneath that, sort of protects the sleeping pad and me from moisture. And then I got a decent sleeping bag. So I have, you know, a down sleeping bed I'm sleeping in that's rated for a cold temperature. When you combine all those things, I'm already going to be pretty good. But when I get the change, when I'm doing stuff, I can sit there in my thermals outside of my sleeping bag and not build that chill that, like you said, you can quickly get outside.
All right,
and
now.
In the morning, just to put a few more pieces in and put your cup up there and get it warm up.
All right, what's Red Sand Adventures? Did you ever try burning them fire logs you can buy? I think they are made of sawdust. Just thought you could cut it up into small pieces.
So, yes, I've tried that. And they don't cut well. To be honest with you, like, if you ever try to cut or break one of those fire logs up, they tend to crumble a lot. I've also tried using the pellets, the wood pellets, and it's a really good method for starting the fire. Because you can take a handful of that, a little bit of paper, and you can get like a decent little burn going on there, and then you put your wood and stuff, and it's an easier way to get started. So definitely an option to consider. And in the right circumstances, I have taken those fire logs and used in a campfire, because sometimes fires are good dry wood is hard to find, and you know you're going out or you know you're showing up late, you can pick up a box of it. I used it in my house for a while, so I just grabbed one of those. Mm-hmm. So
the creosote logs is what you mean, or whatever, you know, the one where you just basically light the paper, fire it in, and off you go.
It wasn't a creosote log, but it was a bio log. It was the one I had bought. It was a brand. Shaw makes them. There's a bunch of companies that make them. You can, you know, it's an alternative to regular firewood.
Okay. Now I'm going to self admit I've never used any of these products. I've used like the little sticks, the fire starting sticks, and I assume the fire logs are just larger versions of this, but I've never used any kind of fire log or creosote log or any of this stuff.
So what they do is they take wood chips and they press it really, really hard at a high temperature, and it kind of makes a bond to itself. So basically, it's like a sawdust, and you can bond it. And the beauty of it is you can use all the wood. Like with firewood, all the little branches and twigs and stuff that tends to get left, and they only keep the big log. With this stuff, you take all the wood, you just push it through this processor, and it comes out the other side. Sort of like we call it aspenite, but the particle boards used in construction.
Oh, I know what you mean. Now, my question would be,
OSB.
Ben, do you get longer burn times out of this? Would there be an advantage to burning these things in one of these little stoves? Because it's going to come already dry, but it like where it's a solid log, would it still effectively burn in there? And would you get a longer burn time out of it where it's condensed wood versus some of the other stuff you throw in there? Because 9 times out of 10, when you're out in the woods, you're going to get a significant amount of softwood in there. It's going to burn a little quicker because hardwood that's dry is generally a little trickier to find out in the wild.
So I mean they advertise 2 to 3 hours per log. I found one log never burned well. Even when I used it at home, I found you kind of needed the two, and you get the fire lit between them, and they feed off each other. You might squeeze two into this thing and get it lit off. I'd be somewhat careful because they may burn a little bit hotter. They're drier and a more inconsistent thing. They don't leave as much ash. They are a good alternative. I used them. So when I bought them, it actually was comparable to buying cut and split wood. And they all came in boxes, so you could burn the box. It was relatively me. I bought a pallet, but I think I had each box was a little bit bigger than, say, a shoe box, and I had like 12 logs in each one. I can't remember exactly what it was. And yeah, I think we probably could burn them in that. I would, test it out.
Well, we have some comments from the side here. So Steve made a real good point. Some fire logs are not suitable for cooking on. Just a heads up for the marshmallow roast lovers out there. Good point. Could be some chemicals and glue in there. Just be aware of what you are buying. If it says not suitable for cooking, there's a good reason for that. Now, Dave said, if you have your vent closed to the bare minimum, a Duraflame log can last 3 to 4 hours. It'll be warm, though, not hot.
Yeah, I agree. I had a few advantages I liked when I was using them at home, but honestly, as an overall product, I preferred real wood. I didn't find it as good a replacement as they said it was. They claimed that one pallet was, which was about 4 by 4 by 4 solid, had about the same BTUs as an entire cord of wood, and I did not find that to be the fact. So I would have had to have bought a lot more. I burned through it quicker than I expected compared to when I was burning wood. And the nice thing with wood is I could often throw one big piece in, it would burn all night. Where with this stuff, like you said, even if you get it in and all dialed down, I never made it through a night with this stuff. So you'd have to wake up in the middle of the night, go down to fill it if you wanted to keep the fire going all night. And that was a nuisance. And my stove, when loaded up tight with firewood, I could get a 8 to 10 hours burn out of it.
I was going to
And
say, I
same
get
thing.
about 8 to 10 hours out of mine when it's stocked full.
Yeah, so I would load mine up in the morning before I went to work. When I got home, there would be coals in there. I could throw a few more in. I'd run it pretty hot all evening. And then I'd load it up that night and shut it down. And it would go through the whole night and then start the same process. So I was probably burning about 16 plus hours at a slow rate, and then I was running the other 8 at a relatively high rate, and I found it kept my chimney clear.
And I
And it
was
was.
just gonna say that's much what I do with my own wood stove here. If you kind of let it smolder through the night and day, I try to get a little bit of a hotter fire going. I do have one of those magnetic things on there, and I use that as my guide. Do you find that translates a little bit to the tent stoves? Would you run it a little hotter to keep it a little cleaner in your chimney? Or is that really not an issue where you're taking it apart and you always have that advantage of being able to clean it out every single use? You know, even if you use it 2 or 3 days, unless you're into some really damp wood. I don't foresee it making a lot of creosote, but maybe I'm wrong on this, Ben. What's your thoughts?
You do get a bit of creosote. I don't think enough to plug it up. I've never had that problem. But what I did have when I was using the the automotive style chimney that I had built was the gaps or the seams would fill with a bit of creosote.
Mm-hmm.
And if it cooled down, you had to be more of a man than me to pull them apart. So they
became almost, tapping apart.
They almost welded it shut. And what I found is that you either had to A, heat it up and separate it. So a good pair of leather gloves and sort of try to separate it while it was hot was easy enough. Or the other thing is you were literally like pounding on it on something inside and risking denting it. Now, they were pretty tough, I must say. The automotive style one took quite a pounding to do any real damage to them. And then the lightweight stainless steel ones I have, they unrolled similar to this method, but I had multiple lengths. So I had, I think, 2-foot lengths because that's all I could get and rolled them up, and then I kept joining them, and I had 6 to 7 feet total.
So for our listeners out there that may not be familiar with wood-burning stoves and stuff like that, when we say creosote, what creosote is it's a byproduct of combusting wood. Generally, as it cools and hits the chimney and stuff like that, it's going to condense a little bit, and it's like the on-burnt particulate that comes out. It's a lot of carbons and moisture and stuff like that. It binds together, and this stuff, as it settles out, can literally turn almost as hard as cement. It can be really hard stuff. It's generally pretty brittle, but it sticks to the inside of the pipe. And in the instance of like a wood stove, if this stuff builds up over time and then you get a big fire going, it can reignite because it is carbonized material, much like char cloth and things like that. It can reignite. Then you get what's called a flue fire, where the fire is no longer burning in the firebox. It's actually traveled into the pipe and it's ignited in there, and the pipe will burn, and depending on your setup, that can lead into other problems. Like flue fires are generally a big thing around here. Working in the fire service, I get called to several of them a year. It's just not a good thing in a house, and this is why I was asking if it ever became a problem in a tent. The benefit of being in a tent is you don't have all the wood and stuff around you, but if it's still got away from you, it could potentially create some problems, because that it kind of self-feeds itself in the pipe, and it burns really hot, really aggressively. Even for a short amount of time, that throws out a ton of heat.
Yeah, you do want to keep an eye on it. Like you said, the thing is, most times you're hot tin camping, you're only hot tin camping for 1 or 2 nights. If you were doing it longer, some people use a similar setup in like a yurt, which might be set up all winter. I would definitely probably once or twice a week take the chimney down and just give it a quick cleaning, just to be sure. And once the more you use it, and you kind of get used to your wood, you'll know how bad it is, and you may decide maybe it's once a week or once every 2 weeks. But you definitely want to start off a bit more frequently and then stretch it and see how it works. But I have seen it build up a little bit. And like you said, it's the hot gases reconform to a like a liquid, almost a paste in some instances. And it's like a tar or turpentine type, you know, it's pitch.
It's gross. You can get into everything,
right? And it's usable for stuff too. You can collect it. It's, like you said, you can make a glue out of it.
So something Dave said here is the worst creosote offender on earth is pine, and that's kind of what I was alluding to with the softwoods. Softwoods that have a lot of what's the word I'm looking for here? Saps, balsams, things like that. Woods that kind of have their own sap to them like that are going to be your bigger offenders. So of course, any softwood, pine being a very sappy tree. What? Resin. Thank you. Any kind of tree that has resin is going to be an offender for creosote. But yeah, it has that stickiness to it. It's tackiness. It holds moisture. It bonds with the carbon, sticks to the pipe, and you're right back to the same spot. And you can't beat a large debarked piece of oak for hours of heat. So oak, rock maple, or what's more commonly called sugar maple in North America, yellow birch. If you can get it dried out good, beech is not too bad. Those are all good woods that are going to be hard. So denser woods, trickier to dry. They're going to give you more BTUs. Woods that burn nice, and we covered this in the Science of Fire one here once upon a time. Just a quick recap is like your popples, your ashes, stuff like that. It's going to burn really nice, really quick, not a ton of heat. And then you kind of come down to your softwoods, which burns almost when they're wet, but same kind of deal. A lot of sparks, snap, and crackling, which is nice for a fire outside. Also generally produces a lot of smoke, grease, soot, and all that good stuff. Whole other episode on that. I encourage you to check it out.
So you kind of brought up a good subject, and maybe we should talk about that a bit here now. So there is the spark arrestor. This spark arrestor maybe could be a bit better, but it's a hard debate with this. If you have the screen, there's a design, and I know the Nora tent had it. There's a small slit you could push a screen through and stop small sparks and stuff from coming out of it. This one has slightly bigger thing here. It'll also prevent moisture and stuff from coming down, like rain and stuff. But if you're burning things like pine, and especially if you throw a few, anything that's going to throw flankers, sparks and stuff up through, that could be a problem, because it'll come back down and set on your tent and burn holes in your tent. So you want to make sure your chimney's high enough. It should be at least a foot higher than the highest part of your tent. And you do need to make sure it's secure. So these things come with the three tie down points. So after you set your tent up and you get this set up, then you're going to want to run things down so that if there's a breeze or something, it doesn't push around, because your stove jack is probably going to only be probably 8x8. So that's sticking up the center. That means you don't have 4 inches to either side before it can start affecting your tent itself. So you want to really make sure that it doesn't. And what I had done in my old one is I actually had I wouldn't say it was a 45. I'd say it was like a 30 or 15 degree angled chimney. And I actually used that one for a reason. So I could put my stove a little closer to the center and angle it back through. This one's going to go straight up. So I have to be a little bit more precise in where I lay everything.
And that's a good point there too. Depending on your chimney design and the way it vents out can also affect the way that your stove draws. You may find that your stove draws really well when you're set up in one area and not so good in another area. There is a lot of things that go into this, and as you work with it, you'll learn more of them. An important one Ben said there is make sure it's above the height of your tent. That allows so there's nothing really blocking it, or worse yet, if wind hits it, it can sometimes shove air back down the pipe, and then you get backdrafting and all that smoke and stuff coming out, or baffling back, whatever you want to call it. So there's things to do with that, and it is a learning process, and you learn that even as you in houses and stuff like that. Two people with the exact same amount of stove pipe and the exact same stoves, I bet you their stoves burn two different ways, simply because of the location that they are and how high up that pipe goes above the tallest part of their house.
Yeah. What else? So watch for sparks. Make sure your chimney is going through the hole at the right spot. That's more important than you might think. Always make sure that the thing is cool before you decide to do something with it. It's awful tempting sometimes to just, I'm ready to go, let's just take it, turn it upside down, and knock all the ashes and stuff out of it and get moving. You really want to make sure that thing's fully out and cool before you start moving, because otherwise you may have a few hot embers in there that you're throwing out into a pack or something. You could really regret that. Or just in taking it apart, burn yourself. The chimney itself, and these titanium ones especially, and the stainless steel ones also, it's super thin. It's like paper thin. I mean, it's stronger than paper, but it's sharp. And so they provide you with anti-cut gloves for a reason.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah. So you'll probably want to wear those, because it's going to help prevent the likelihood of yourself cutting yourself while you're doing it. A lot of people do struggle with rolling those chimneys because you are dealing with something. I think the chimney on this thing is like 7 foot long. I haven't rolled it out yet. But trying to roll a 7 foot long chimney takes some effort, right? Because it's easy to kink it, and then it's got a kink, and the kink really never comes right over them.
I covered all the points I wanted to, Ben. We are rolling up on 54 minutes here. Was there any, what's your final thoughts on a stove? Is there any tips, tricks, things like that a new stove buyer, much like myself or somebody else out there, could look for in a stove, or what to avoid in a stove? What's some things to keep on your mind if you're new to this?
I mentioned the window. Buying the extra glass will add to the weight, and there is the risk of damaging it. So the glass is replaceable, and you can buy other replacement glass from places, but it's a hassle you probably don't want to worry about. And honestly, if you get out there and you have the one with the whole side as glass, you're talking about like an 8-inch long by probably 4-inch high piece of glass, which compared to the one in your house is pretty small. But if that breaks, your stove is useless until you get back, right? A small crack you might get away with, it's just a crack and you'll just, but is that, if that crack, if it breaks out completely, then you have one side of your stove open and you won't be able to control the heat. So reducing the amount of glass to me had that advantage. I look for a titanium one. Honestly, really be honest with yourself. Do you need, what are you doing? Are you car camping? If you're car camping, maybe the stainless steel one is a, you know, save yourself $100. That's about the difference in this particular brand to the stainless steel to the titanium. It's about $100. Save yourself a few bucks and enjoy it. Would it be the end of the world? You're talking probably a difference of 1 to 2 pounds total. So, you know, again, be honest with yourself. Does the weight matter? The size and shape and everything else would be almost the same. What else? I like the ones that fold down, but there are ones that everything stores inside. So that's probably, you know, again. But the big thing is if you're going to hot tin camp, you're going to need a stove. Come up with a solution you're going to be happy with. You can get away with the Princess Otto one. I would recommend somebody who has at least a decent sled and isn't pulling it very far, or more precisely, someone who's probably car camping and is only going to be a few hundred feet from their car. As you go up and travel greater and greater distances, something like this would become more and more valuable to you.
And one last comment from the side here, Red Bear Tactical. We were talking about rolling up the pipes there. I heard the trick to rolling them is to start in a corner and roll it across to start it. So once again, food for thought. So
I've seen that. So you roll it angled, which kind of doesn't make sense when you're doing it. But then, like you said, you kind of rotate it so that it goes the right way. And I've watched a guy do it, and it worked out quite well. Just takes a little bit more fiddling, but once he got it all rolled in shape, he had the rings on it and he just kept adjusting it and adjusting it a very slow bit, and next thing you know, he had it 90 again and it worked fine. And so maybe Red Bear Tactical will come close and show me how to do it.
So there you go, Red Bear, shout out to you, bud. The rings help center it, and that makes sense. It would just keep everything kind of centered in for you there. But, sorry, Ben.
It just keeps everything, like I said, centered and in place. It keeps it from coming apart. Because if it comes apart, you're starting all over again.
And that's a fair point. And the other thing is, you don't want to accidentally have this thing spread apart while it's on the stove.
No. So, no. Overall, I'm happy with the build of this particular stove. I would probably so far recommend it. I will plan getting it tested out. I wish I could say I'm testing it this weekend. I'm not. But I'm hoping before too many weekends go by, I'll get the chance to be out.
Well, all right. I think that's as good a place as any because we are kind of winding down. Once they are burned in, they should be easier to roll along. So once they're burned in, they should be easier to roll long ways as well.
Yeah, they build what people say is a bit of a memory, so then they'll just kind of spring to the two shapes.
Yeah, interesting to know. All right, so like I said, that's probably a good spot to tie her up here tonight, unless you had any final thoughts there, Ben. We kind of hit our hour. And.
No, I think for now I'm good. I do plan on reviewing this and hopefully get a chance to do a more thorough review and show people, you know, the first full setup and probably the first bolt burn-in. So if I can get out in the next couple of weekends for a couple hours, I might just get out, light a few fires in it, and not camp for the night for the first time using it.
All right. Well, we look forward to seeing that. When you do the review, hopefully you'll do a video and you'll throw it up on the Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures channel and people can check that out. So until next week, folks, get out there, play safe, get dirty, have fun. Let us know about it. As always, you can get a hold of us any of those things down there. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Night, everybody.